Good morning. I am Reverend Tamara Labak, and I come to you from All Souls in Tulsa, who bids you welcome. I am no longer serving there, but I know that they have a great affection for this congregation and its ministry. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. Christianity is not the only religion to explain that it was God's hand who separated the people. There are creation stories all across the globe with similar themes. But early in Genesis, humanity is created in the image and the likeness of God, and then Yahweh discovers the people building a tower into the heavens so that they can make a name for themselves. If as one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this, Yahweh says in chapter 6, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so that they will not understand each other. These stories exist across cultures and have lasted for generation after generation because they explain something that resonates with the human spirit, because they feel psychologically true. It is the feeling that we have been scattered. We have been divided as a people, divided even in this country, in this movement, in our cities, even in our churches. We have different and unique experiences, different understandings of how we have come to be who we are, different meanings that we make about what our purpose in life is and how to express it. And we know that we cannot really completely understand what it means to be someone else. And as a people of this free faith, we hold diversity as a value. That uniqueness, we hold it sacred as something that actually makes us better and stronger, even more beautiful. In our tradition, it is actually in our diversity, not just in our unity, that we reflect the holy. Now, unfortunately, this doesn't always translate to how we handle ourselves in church. We seek more visible diversity, but real difference, the kind that pushes us to the edge of our comfort zone, the kind of difference that makes a difference to us, is not inherently welcomed all the time in our church culture because it requires us to stretch and change and question in our churches, which we hold as our sanctuaries. Now, at All Souls Tulsa, we had a crash course in culturally and racially diverse change management in a religious institution, and they continue actually to work on that every day. We were given an opportunity of a lifetime with the instant incorporation of 300 Pentecostal Universalists, of whom about a third were African American, which increased, of course, the number of people of color in the congregation from 3 to 103 overnight. Now, we knew that this was going to be hard work and that our values necessitated it. Our souls craved churches to reflect the diversity of the city in which we served and of the world that we lived in. And the biggest lesson that we learned was that we had a lot of work to do before anyone else would feel welcome or before anyone else could feel that our church was their home too. We had to carefully examine who we were, how we came to be who we were, how we made decisions, what values we held that were foundational, and what behaviors were standard but malleable. Now, in the Abrahamic faith traditions, when Yahweh separates humanity, the story does not end with the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel is just one of three stories closely woven together: Babel, Moses and the Commandments, and the Pentecost. So first, Yahweh separates the people because we are full of pride and trying to actually be like God. And then we learned to separate ourselves by joining those who seemed to be like us lifting up one or a few traits well above the others and fixating on those common traits as the only significant, grouping ourselves by them and resisting who we were not. And from that separation came wars and isms and oppression. In this country, actually, our joining together created systemic oppression and privilege that to this day offers more value in society to whites over people of color, to men over women, to cisgender over transgender, to straight over lesbian, gay, and bisexual, to able-bodied over the disabled, to US-born over the immigrant, to native English speakers over non-native English speakers, to Protestant Christians even over the non-religious and other religions, and the wealthy over the poor. And so our unspoken cultural rules were formed about what is right and good and true, about what we should want or aspire to be, and it's all a lie. So Yahweh scatters us out of fear, but in Acts 2, something magical happens. The story takes a turn. Pentecost actually happened on the Jewish festival day of Shavuot, which was celebrated long before Jesus ever arrived on the scene. Shavuot was the day commemorating Yahweh giving Moses the Ten Commandments, and this was actually the birthday of the synagogue, so to speak, in the old ways. Everyone hearing this story in Acts at that time would actually know this. And on that day, something very strange happened to a group of Jesus' followers. Something happens that most Unitarians have dismissed and Jefferson cut out and put on the floor. You see, Pente means 50. So 50 days after Easter on Pentecost, God evidently changed her mind. On Pentecost, we are told that people from all over, Parthians and Medes and Elamites and people from Pontus and Asia and Egypt and the parts of Libya near Cyrene, all those visitors from Rome, people with really easy names to pronounce and difficult, the marginalized and the mainstream, they were gathered together in the upper room. Now, the future site, this upper room is the future site of the Last Supper, if you're really paying attention, which is a whole nother sermon, and one of the reasons why the Bible delights me so much. But this diverse gaggle of folks were gathered, likely trading goods, and there was probably a meal. And included at that event were a group of Galileans, those who were following Jesus. And the wind began to blow. Now, in biblical language, if the wind begins to blow, it means that you had better wake up, because something very important is about to happen, and the fire under someone's tush is about to get fanned. So the wind begins to blow, and the people see what appear to be tongues of fire that separate and come to rest on Jesus' followers, and I like to imagine them coming down and landing directly on their hearts. And the Galileans began to speak. They spoke from their hearts about how incredible it is to be awake and alive. They were sharing their gratitude for their existence and the wonders of life and their relationship with the holy. Now, the passersby on the street are said to have heard nothing but gibberish, nothing but noise. But the people in the room, heard their own language actually coming from the Galileans. They heard a message that resonated with their experience. So Yahweh must have decided that even in our differences, with some help, when our hearts are touched with the fire of spirit, humanity could, in fact, understand one another. When we speak from our authentic selves, when we lead with our vulnerability, we can communicate even with people who are vastly different from us. And it's beautiful. And when we listen from that place, from our hearts on fire, when we listen not to respond, but to connect with what matters to them, to connect to their experience of the holy, we will hear the language of our own hearts speaking back to us. And this was, in fact, more beautiful than homogeny, more beautiful than unity without difference. And the biblical writers could have said, and it was good. Now, this was a miracle, but it's no more surprising than the Cubs making it to the World Series after 71 years. So just give a little bit, okay? The miracle of Pentecost, speaking and listening with your heart on fire, was in fact the beginning of the birthday of the church, of both our Unitarian and our Universalist roots. And yet this story doesn't make our story very often. People with very different experiences, with different cultures and different understandings, were all under the same roof, declaring the story of transformation in their lives, talking about what matters to them in their own tongues, and everyone present and awake understood. Now, there were some skeptics, mind you. Not everyone was buying into this miracle. Someone in the room, likely a Unitarian seeking an explanation, exclaimed, "They've all had too much wine." But Peter, of course, said, "No, the wine wasn't even out yet. It was only 9 a.m. They were intoxicated, but by connection. So Yahweh separates the people in Genesis, and then by miracle of miracles, there's this opportunity to get together in the same room and speak in our own tongues about the mystery of life, the wonder of our experience of being human and being alive. And they are seen and heard and understood by those closest to them. What if our churches really looked like that? What if our churches could be a container that was that gracious, a meeting place for that kind of dialogue, a gathering place of hearts on fire, a hearth from which many hearts could be warmed? What if in our meeting places we could speak from a point of difference about what matters to us and be heard, about the struggles and the joys, the difficult decisions of how we come to truth, and about the mystery of our existence? You, my friends, are the keeper of the flame. How can you tend your own fire such that your ears will hear a fellow traveler, no matter what disguise they might be wearing, and no matter what language they may speak? This act in Acts has been mimicked and practiced by Pentecostals all over the world as a form of prayer and worship. Pentecostals report that they feel their hearts opening up in what they would call a baptism of the Holy Spirit, allowing their voices, not confined by their own language, to become a tool of praise. Pentecostalism is the fastest growing religion in the United States and in the world today. And I want to lift up to you that Pentecostals are not all uneducated. They're not all conservative. They're not all Republicans. And they're not all trying to convert you. The beauty of the miracle of this story in Acts is not about speaking gibberish. It's about speaking in a language that can be understood to those who are different than you. You're likely already fluent in a multitude of religious and secular languages: science and humanism, philosophy, atheism, maybe theism, Buddhism. Learning to speak the language of those with whom we are in relationship benefits us as well as them. But how do we honor our own experience and the experience of others with healthy boundaries that honor who we are? How do we keep our heart on fire, open to each other and to change? Well, first and foremost, we must know our own culture. We must know the ground in which we were planted. We must know how we came to be who we are, not only for ourselves, but for the organizations in which we are a part. We must know our rules and nuances, assumptions and idioms and idiosyncrasies, how we came to be who we are with our preferences, our likes and dislikes, beliefs and values, our wounds and our aversions. We need to understand better our implicit bias so that we can choose how to respond to it. Do we agree or do we disagree? Do we accept this value or not? In the workshop yesterday that about 25 of you all joined me with, I actually mentioned a metaphor that I think is really helpful. And it's thinking of culture as this beam of a radio station, and you have an antenna. And it's constantly on. It's a radio station that plays your family's channel. It plays the cultural channel of what it means to be a member of all the groups you're a part of. So a woman, if you're gay or straight, what your gender is. And it's just constantly beaming. And if we aren't paying attention to the station it's on, it just automatically comes out of our mouth. So we have to pay attention to that station, what it's saying, and whether or not we agree or disagree so that we can choose to change the channel. When we listen with our hearts open, we can extend beyond our own single point of view and listen from the vantage point of being a member of a people of this free faith, where our job is to continue to strive to seek to understand all of God's children, whether you call yourself one of them or not. How do we keep our hearts on fire, open to each other and to change? The first way was to know your own culture. The second way is to come to church, to be part of a community, and especially to be part of a community that's paying attention to this matter. You have an amazing program here that's called the Diversity Learning Circle, where with a group of amazing, open-hearted other seekers, you can explore your own culture and work in collaboration with another church to encounter difference and stretch and grow, to practice listening from your heart on fire and speaking in your own tongue, consciously. Building your cultural competency by understanding your own cultural complexity is actually the key to being effective at all other change that you'd like to see in the world. It's a great place to start. And church, in my opinion, is a rehearsal for how we want to be in the world. So what better place to start? Now, having those former New Dimensions members at All Souls helped us to do an even better job of recognizing the beauty in our diversity. But it's more evident now, more than ever, that we are like the many facets of a diamond. We each reflect the light and the truth. But it also helped me to understand that we are called as Unitarian Universalists in this day and age to what has been named a new American pluralism. We are teed up to be the next big thing, if we're willing to take a step forward. Our churches are poised to meet the needs of a new American pluralist church. We cannot stay isolated in any way, any longer, or we will very quickly become irrelevant. So if you are someone who believes that religion or even Christianity is at the core of many of our problems in the world, then this is what we should be doing to seek to change it. It's understanding that it's a part of us first, embracing our roots to become part of the religious dialogue. So it begins by recognizing the diversity already present among us, the less obvious and hidden ways in which we are different from one another. Because what happened on that first day of Pentecost is still happening. Our covenantal faith lends itself more than any other to embrace this new era. And our churches hold a sanctuary where no matter how unique your experience, your struggle, or your journey, if we continue to lead with that vulnerability, our stories will be held and we will be understood. And we will manifest our values of inclusion in the world, making space for those who cannot make space for themselves. May we all declare the wonders of God. May we know and confess the wonders of being human and being alive to one another. May we risk speaking in our own tongues. Tend your hearth, fan the flames, and remember the miracle of Pentecost. Amen.